Okay, people, so it is time to bring the new Echo Chamber. Still having Wi-Fi issues, right? So this might be out a little bit later than we'd hoped, but we got a two-parter. Yes, a great two-parter. And in part one, man, we got a comedy, we got a Western, and we also take a look at the zombie film that changed it all, right? Which then spawned a sequel and has now brought in a new trilogy, right? So we go back to the beginning, right? We look at the original, the first sequel, and now the new joint. So we have all of that for you in part one. Sit back and let's go. Okay, people, shall we take a home delivery? Well, let's take a look. Okay, people, so we took a look at Home Delivery. This is the new film from Tom Harp, who wrote and directed. Okay, it is produced by Philippe Palacios, Lundy Shackleton, and Rosanna Thomas. It is executive produced by Pilar de Posadas. It is associate produced by Sarai Gudetti, and line production from Devon Isaacson. Simon Bass took care of music, with David Volraff on cinematography. Casting was Lisa Zagora. Danielle Osborne is production design, with Christina Rubin art direction. Set decoration is Marianne Liu. Costume design was handled by Megan Leon. We have Ramona Colazzo, Melissa Eastwick, Brenda Lopez, Celeste Maxwell, Angela Neef, and Shannon Marie Trigger on hair, makeup, all of that jazz. Okay, our cast. Right, we have got boom, boom, boom. Where is everyone? Oh my days. Okay. Ellie Ferguson is played by Melanie Field. We have got God damn it. This is like just atrocious the way this has all been laid out. Yeah, like boy. Alright, let's try and get this in a better place, because it's going to be a nightmare. Okay, yeah, so her sister, Amy, is played by Linda Sloan. Amy's husband, Kevin, is played by Jimmy Simpson. We've got their parents, their mother, Linda, played by Leslie Ann Warren. Then there is Linda's husband. Oh, I just missed someone. Right. Yeah, that would have made sense. Anyway, there's Linda's husband, Gary, played by Joe Pantolano. Right. And her first husband, Howard, played by Peter McNichol. Obviously, I forgot Ellie's husband, right, who is played by Donald Faison, and that is Jimmy. We've got Ellie's midwife, Sarah, played by Tracy Toms, and her other midwife, Shanae, played by Rainn Wilson. Who else do we have? There's Alma Sereno, played by Sheila Carrasco. Dr. Farage, played by Zahara Fazal. Dr. Tamblyn, played by Phil Abrahams. Gloria, played by London Garcia. Vonda, played by Janie Haddad Tompkins. We have got, who else do we have? Calippo, played by Caitlin Norton. Jimmy's limo driver, played by Lawrence Stepney. A young version of Linda is played by Cassie Ferrick. The nurse at reception, played by Keisha Zola. I think that is all our main characters. Okay. So, what is this film about? A model who met her husband less than a year ago invites her childless sister and estranged family to join them for the birth of their child at their home. It's going to get messy. So yes, that is the gist of things, people. Yeah, this is like, it's an interesting one, right? Because it's sold as a comedy. And I can see, like, you know, it's not, let's just say, my type of comedy, right? But I can see people, you know what I mean, vibing with it, getting down with the laughs and all of that jazz, right? I think the interesting thing is it shows that, like, sensitivity goes a long way, right? You know what I mean? You've got Ellie, you know, wanting everyone to be about her birth. But you have to understand there's people that maybe can't have kids or don't want kids, or, you know what I mean? There's so many things that you might not be, you know, whim to. So there's certain, like, comments, there's certain things that can be said that are just a bit, like, tone deaf. Like, think about it, right? Just because you're happy about this thing doesn't mean everyone wants that thing. You know what I mean? And I think that was like, you know, something about this film, because there's just so many situations going down, right? So many situations going down that, you know, not everyone is, let's say, aware to. I didn't laugh, but I did think there was a really just, there was this moment between the sisters in, it was probably 3/4 of the way into the film, I'd say, right? And I thought that was handled very well. I thought the way they delivered that moment was probably the best moment of the film, I probably would say, right? Now, there's other things like the naming and, you know, that are meant to be, but you just be like, I don't even, like, yeah. But that for me was, you know, the best thing. Like, there's all the stuff about the modeling doesn't really factor into it, really, to be honest with you. You know, I guess it's just a facet they wanted to do with the film, but nothing. It's not every character is as layered, but I think there are characters, like, they do flesh out Kevin and Amy a bit more as the film goes on. Even Sarah gets a little bit of something, you know what I mean? There's the parent situation, which is there. We don't really get behind the curtain on it, you know? Don't really do that. I think Jimmy, there could have been a bit more with Jimmy, you know? Could be a bit more about that. And just on their timeline, right? How, because, you know, they didn't know each other. They haven't been together for more than a year, which kind of means they got pregnant basically straight away, I figure. But we don't really touch upon any of that. And just any of that, how any of that works, right? But it is one of them films, I think. Last year there was that film Babes. Was it last year or was it early this year? I don't know. It was that, but there was that film Babes, right? This, if you enjoyed Babes and you know, you laughed and you frolicked and all of that jazz, right? I think if that was your jam, then, yeah, I think you will enjoy Home Delivery. You know, it's very much speaks to that. It's that kind of thing. Like, even Nomads, right? That film, that Netflix film from a few weeks back. If you enjoyed that, I think you will enjoy Home Delivery. You know, there's not crazy depth, right? It's talking about essentially home delivery, right? Baby's birth and all of that. Now, I think it could have really looked at that whole thing, you know, and the fact that it's talked about, like, that this is the essence of, and, you know what I mean, but address those kind of stereotypes that get thrown around with that shit, you know, like, I think that could have been interesting. Like, there's some weird things, like, I feel she was shaving herself in the toilet, right? I think so, she was, and it's like, why? Right? Like, why? You know what I mean? Like, that could have been explained. Because everyone, you know. So, there's bits that I think are thrown there for comedy. But, like, for it to work, you then have to kind of explore it a bit more. And we don't do that. You know what I mean? We don't really do that. So that's a bit weird. But I will say, casting wise, I think that was done very well. I think the casting works perfectly because you buy the you buy the relationships. You know what I mean? You buy the Jimmy and Ellie are a thing. You buy Amy and Kevin. You buy Linda and Howard. Linda Howard and Linda Gary. You buy all of those dynamics. And the actors play those roles very well. You know, Sarah and Shanae as the midwives. You buy them. So I think the casting is very good. The script and the story are the things that kind of let it down in places. Yeah. But yeah, as I said, if you enjoyed Babes, Nommers, right, those type of films, then yeah, this will be for you. This will work as a film and as a comedy. Okay, so yeah, it's a weird one, right? Because I think it dropped in cinemas in the States in February 2024, but it's only just come out in the UK, right, via Sky and Now TV. So yeah, I think, right, like the release information, there's not a whole lot of information regarding the film, which does make these things very friggin' difficult. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's odd. They're like, our whole team works extremely hard to, you know, make this happen. So it is a bit odd when, you know, it's just not listed very well, right? It's just not listed. Like, give people their dues, you know what I mean? Hey, but anyway, we took a look at it, so you know if you want to or not, right? Home delivery. Okay, we got a little bit of a Western for you now, people. We're looking at Rust. Okay, so thanks to Signature, we got to check out Rust. Yeah, I don't think anyone thought this film was going to actually come out, but it is, right? It is written and directed by Joel Souza, who, I think came up with the story with Alec Baldwin. That's what I believe happened. All right, now, the film is produced by Alec Baldwin and Matt Del Piano, along with, I do believe, Joel Souza produces too, Nathan Kinger, Grant Hill, there's a lot of people involved in this film, which kind of makes sense after everything that kind of went down. Angel Nigam, Ryan Donald Smith, Melanie Spadone, Ryan Winterstone, all produced as well. It's executive produced by Sama Zeta, Arash Zari, Phil Wilson, Ahuva Weinberg, Caleb Wiley, Rama Wagner, Katinka van der Meer, David Trende, Steven Suber, Spencer Stracklin, Scott Somerville, Rebecca Shriver, Servanus Saspu, Gary Russell, Rachel Robinson Zeta, Mason Zizou, Adam Remis, Jared Ramirez, Sarah Ramazan, Alariza Ramazan, Brian Popleka, Mike Pipala, Gabrielle Pickle is line production, also executive producing, Judith Marion Phillips, Manish Pandya, David Nielsen, Tyler M. Nielsen, Eric Ney, Amir Nazari, Julian Movesian, Howard Morin, Jason Morgan, Ruxana Mohammed, Ibrahim Mohammed, Garrett Myers, Lynn Meyer, Robert Melendez, Dharma Meter, Matthew McFarlane, John McHugh, Matthew May, Dane Maxwell, Jeremy Mathis, Carl Martinu, Stephanie A. Maricano II, Justin Malayo, Richard Lucking, Chad Lucking, Gerardo Lopez, Teresi Lopes, Frank Lombardozzi, William Lasher, Ryan Lang, Ray Kermani, Jonathan Catanova, Jordan Kaplowitz, Danny Candova, Timothy Callinan, Idrit Jalal, Jack Jacob, Nezemk Izanoe, Matthew Hutchins, Joe Ho, Tina Harrington, Marshall Harrington, Levi Herney, Matthew Helderman, Stephanie Hayes, Ifran Hasoloa, Azif Hasaloa, Richard Gray, Peter Graham, Tyler Gold, Keith Goss, Lorena Gomez Barris, Aaron Garner, Brandon Findake, Carlos Emery, Cade Durillo, Jefferson Dungan, James Dudley, Peter Downing, Kyle Doney, Sam Dreckerson, Jordan E. Delaney, Justin Dean, Jeffrey Danielson, Michael Kresmak, James Cunningham, Troy Kronk, Christopher Connaby, Rick Clemens, Alan Chenney, Jared Brown, Carter Boehm, Marco Balassini, Mohamed Ahmed, and Brandon Aguilera. Boy, so many fucking people involved on that. That's kind of crazy, man. That is crazy. Anyway, yeah, cinematographer, the original cinematographer was Helena Hutchins, and after her tragic death, Bianca Klein took over. David Adelman edits the piece. Production design is Brian Novell. Set decoration is Maxwell Graves and Roberta Marquez Serret. Therese Davis is costume design. Hair and makeup, we have Court Winterborn, Monica Spendlove, Whitney Pettison, Melissa Otteri, Katya Luce, Stacey Lockhart, Lisa Hill, Sierra Rose Griffin, Sarah Dickman, and Catherine Durana. Right, so our cast, who is actually in this joint? Right, so Alec Baldwin is Harland Rust. We then have got his sister, Evelyn Bassett, played by Frances Fisher. Hold on, who else do we have? There is his, what would you call it? His nephew? Grandson. Lucas Hollister, played by Patrick Scott McDermott. There is Lucas's brother, his brother isn't listed there. Let's have a look. His brother is Jacob Hollister, played by Easton Malcolm. There is, yeah, the way everything is listed, it's all over the place. All right, we'll just go with Wood Helm next, who's played by Josh Hopkins. Fenton Lang, played by Travis Fimmel. Cleet LaFontaine, played by Reese Corio. Boone LaFontaine, played by Devon Werkisa. Blackburn, played by Xander Berkeley. Drum Parker, played by Jake Busey. Big Bill Cochran, played by Abraham Benrubi. Dick Muller, played by Travis Hammer. Lawrence Sitwell, played by Nick Farnell. Willard Leroy, played by Sam Carson. Sheriff Tom Long, played by Richard Gunn. Abigail, played by Asha B. There's Aria Alpert Ajani, who plays Kate Baldry. Emma Helm is played by Mary Kay Riley. Gabriel Clark plays Charles Gantry. Ike Clayton, played by Vic Browder. Rio Alexander is Anselmo. Clayton Gantry is played by Everett Blunk. And that is the son of Charles Gantry, right? And he's a bully, Clayton. Emmett is played by Golden Garnick. Samuel Budry, played by Ewan Simpson. I think that's probably our main lot of people, right? So, who else? All right, let's get to the gist of the film, which is a 13-year-old boy left to fend for himself and his younger brother following their parents' deaths in 1880s. Wyoming goes on a run with his long-estranged grandfather after he's sentenced to hang for the accidental killing of a local rancher. Right, so, yeah, I mean, there's a so much controversy about this film because Helena Hutchins was tragically killed by a stray bullet on set. Sozo was injured in the same shooting. We won't even go into that, right? It's a lot of shit happened, and I don't think anyone really knows the whole gist, so we'll leave it as a tragedy happened, you know? The set got shut down, but eventually they decided to finish the film, right? And they did, but it was just sitting there for a while, right? Finally got picked up and it's getting released. Now, I will say, because it sounded like a bit of a shambles shoot, right? And sometimes you hear about shoots like this and they actually work out, right? Things, and the film is great. I won't say this film is great, but I will say it could be one of the best performances from Baldwin in a while. You know what I mean? Like, he actually doesn't play a bad Rust. And the acting, for the most part, is pretty solid. There are performances that are hammy. There are performances that are okay, but a little flat. I think the script is the weakest part here. Just because, well, it gets very convoluted, right? With all the people after Rust. It just, there's so many people, and it just feels like, wait, who are these? Why are they here? Why are they coming? You know what I mean? It just felt like, pare it back a little, you know? You've got, some of the dialogue is not the best. You know what I mean? You've got weird dialogue and things characters do, like the Abigail character. That whole situation is very bizarre. It felt like it went nowhere, right? It felt like the character is not needed. You remove that character, it's the same film. You know what I mean? Doesn't add any depth. It doesn't really do anything. And you're left like, wait, where did this go? So you have that character. Also, the scene that kind of has why Lucas is on the run doesn't really make any sense. Because it's just like, to take the shot, you have to look up. And it's not like it's looking up, it's fire, right? So, you know what I mean? Like, to not see, it doesn't make any sense. You know? The only way it works is if you're firing over a hill, right, and coming up over the crest as you press, you know what I mean? But it was flat, so that doesn't work, you know what I mean? Just that exciting incident makes no sense, right? If you could make that work, then you're like, okay, right, we have something here. But you have that, right? And then you've got certain things that happen. Like there's the incident with the mum and the son in the cabin. That's just a whole weird situation. That you're just like, wait, what? Like, it's very bizarre. Doesn't make any sense. You know, there's no need for it. So you just have these things that are cluttering up the story, right? The other big thing for me is the fact that you have, you know, the Western, and it kind of looks all Western-y, but it also then looks very clean and too neat and tidy, and you know what I mean? Like, everyone's teeth are good. You have people riding for days, but there's not really any dirt on them, right? From the ride across dusty lands, right? It's this kind of detail that really does bring these things alive a lot of the time, right? Like, if someone's shot, like, blood's gonna spread. So if you don't see any blood, if it's just suddenly this little patch, you're just like, wait, that's not how blood works. What are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like, it's just things like that just make it kind of shaky and take away from what it could have been, right? I think we've seen good Westerns. You know what I mean? So there's a lot to live up to. And we just had the thicket, which, you know, really did hit a lot of these little details. And we had these scenarios that made sense. And, you know, the thing being, there's certain things that happened. And at first, you're like, wait, what? But then you know what I mean, realize what that character is or what they're doing. You're like, oh, shit, yeah. They would do that, or that's how that should play out, right? So these things work. And like, it's the facial expressions, it's the mannerisms, the thicket did it well. With Rust, we don't really get that. You know what I mean? You dressed people to kind of look like, you know, a sheriff, you know what I mean? Oh my God, I can't think of words. Like, just an outlaw, you know, whatever. You've managed to do that, right? So you've got the initial of the pull, but then you lose people with the other detail. And that's always a big one. That's always a big one, right? It's the way people's drop to the floor dead doesn't necessarily feel legit, you know? So it's a shame that these things drag this down. Now, I don't think we know how much was filmed before the incident and then how much they had to pick up at the end. Because if they had to pick up a lot, I imagine it probably wasn't the funnest set to be on after that, right? Or it was just mad weird. So I think that's definitely going to impact things and performances and all of that, unless someone can really rein it in, right? And really get it, you know, make sure we do enough takes so we get that scene. Like, just, you'd have to do all of that. So, you know, judging this film, it's difficult when you don't know what actually happened after the fact. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's an odd one. As I said, Baldwin actually doesn't give a bad performance. His performance is pretty decent, considering everything. It gets a little shaky in certain scenes and trying to convey certain emotions. But after seeing him some really bad things, like this, you know what I mean? Yeah. He did show more of a range with his acting chops for it. So, yeah, if you like a Western, if you like Alec Baldwin, if you're curious, you might want to check out Rust. You know what I mean? As I said, it's when you think of some of the great Westerns. Yeah, Unforgiven, right? A Fistful of Dollars. Yeah, just, you know the ones, people. You know the ones. Young Guns. There's so many, right? That were just like, oh, that was so good. You know, and then, as I said, we just had the thicket that really did a great job. So you always find yourself judging, you know, the film against those things. Maybe if we had none of those, you might look at it differently. It might, you know, give you a better vibe. But there's just these things that are holding it back, you know. But it's out. It probably is out by the time this drops. So all the links will be on the website if you want to go and check out Rust. People, be my guest and let me know how you think, right? How did this work for you? Did you enjoy it, right? Did it speak authentic Western to you? Right? Or were you a little like, ah, it's okay, but it didn't quite hit the mark, let me know, all right? That was my thoughts on Rust. Okay, let's start things off, people. We're going back to 2002 for 28 Days Later. Okay, people, so I decided to go all the way back. Yes, that's right, people. 28 Days Later. This was the... I think it's the fourth film from Danny Boyle, written by Alex Garland. The film is produced by Andrew McDonald, with line production from Robert Howe. I feel there was more people producing than that, but okay, that's all we have. John Murphy took care of the music. Anthony Dodd Mantle is on cinematography, with Chris Gill editing the piece. All right, Gail Stevens took care of casting. Mark Tidlesley is production design. Art direction, we have David Bryan, Mark Digby, Rod Gorwood, Patrick Rolfe, and Dennis Schmegg. Fanny Taylor is set decoration. Rachel Fleming is costume design. All right, so hair and makeup, we have Nuala Conway, Lisa Crawley, Polly Onshore, Andy Garner, Adrian Jetley, Richard Glass, Barry Gower, Sean Sheehan Grigg, Alan Headcock, Kate Hill, Kerry Hombry, Deborah Jarvis, Sally J, Melissa Lacastine, Chris Lyon, Ian Morse, Anthony Parker, Susan Parkinson, Justin Pictoli, John Schoonrud, Robin Schoonrud, and Tristan Schoonrud, Gemma Scott Knox-Gore, D. Sherwood Wallace, Mayo Suzuki, Cliff Wallace, and Norma Webb. Okay, so that takes us to our cast, right? Well, let's just say at the beginning, right, our activists are played by Bindu Destopani, Alex Palmer, and Jaka Hittinen. The scientist was played by David Schneider. We have Jim, who is played by Cillian Murphy. Selena, played by Naomi Harris. Mark, played by Noah Huntley. There is Frank, played by Brendan Gleeson. He's Dr. Hannah, played by Megan Burns. Right, there is Private Clifton, played by Luke Mabley. Sergeant Farrell, played by Stuart McGuire. Corporal Mitchell, played by Ricky Harnett. Private Jones, played by Leo Beale. Private Bell, played by Junior Lanian. Private Bedford, played by Ray Pamafaki. Private Davis, played by Sanjay Rambarath. Private Mauler, played by Marvin Campbell. And Major Henry West, played by Christopher Eccleston. Who else do we have? I think it's then all our infected people after that, really. Jim's dad is played by Christopher Dunn. His mum, played by Emma Hitching. Mr. Bridges, played by Alexander Delmere. Mr. Bridges' daughter, played by Kim McGarrity. Yeah, the infected priest at the start, played by Toby Sedgwick. That's basically it, really. So the gist of the film is this. Where are we? We're here. A group of animal rights activists break into a lab and release monkeys from their cages to rescue them. Despite warnings from a scientist that the monkeys are contagious, as a result of the animal rights activists' actions, a virus that the monkeys contained spreads rapidly across Great Britain and infects numerous people. Jim, who fell into a coma following a bicycle accident shortly before the virus was released, emerges from his coma and finds that London is deserted. He realizes that he is not alone, as within the city there are those that have been infected and those that have not. Jim manages to find more survivors and they head out to Manchester, where a group of British military personnel offer protection of any survivors from the infected. However, Jim and his colleagues have no idea what they're in for. Dum, dum, dum. That is the film, people. And, yeah. I haven't seen this film in ages. But it was one of those films that I thought was great when I was younger. Right? When I first saw this, it was just like, this is so different. Right? Because we had loads of zombie films. And they were just... I mean, it's like films get mad predictable, right? And I find that was the thing with a zombie film. But this one, oh, the zombies were moving. This was the first fast zombie, right? But I think the biggest thing about this film was the fact it wasn't necessarily about the zombies. It's really about the human condition, you know what I mean? Which makes it super intriguing. And we have humans acting in a way where you're like, of course they would do that. Right? Of course. Now, Danny Boyle had mad success, right? Shot to fame with Shallow Grave. Then he did A Life Less Ordinary, which was great. We had Trainspotting, which I didn't like. Right? Everyone loved it, though. Right, so we had those films, and it's like, what will he do next? And then he dropped 28 Days Later. I do believe that is the chronology, yeah, you know what I'm saying. I believe that's how it all went, but yeah, it was just something different. But I hadn't seen it in forever, and because 28 years later is coming, I was like, yo, I should go back. Right? I should go back. They might reference some shit. You know what I mean? Who knows? And watch it. There was so much that I'd forgotten. Because I always thought it was great. Like the army base situation. Because that made so much sense to me. Of course people would be like that. You know what I mean? But I forgot how the film started. Right? I forgot there was these activists. In my head, we start with Jim in the hospital. You know? That's how it started in my head. And not even how we find Jim in the hospital. Right? I had him just walking through the, you know, kind of wake, like, you have him getting out of bed and then walking down the corridors in his gown. That's what happened in my head. That is not what happens in the film. Like, we have the activist firstly, which makes sense. You know what I mean? Stupid fucking activists, right? Like, even once you can see that these monkeys are fucked up. And even being warned that they're infected with shit. Because, of course, you know, they're there for experimentation. So, of course, they might have something. So, you know what I mean? Obviously, you want to shine the light on torture and mistreatment. Take pictures, tell the authorities, do not release them. You know what I mean? So it makes perfect sense how this all goes down, right? If it's not this, it's what happened in Wuhan, right? It is something like that that would always lead to this kind of thing. But then when we get to the hospital, right, I do not remember Jim being buck naked in bed. Because, you know, like, if you're in hospital, you're going to have a gown on, right? Or they're going to put you in pajamas or something. Like, it was an odd choice to have him, like, butt naked like that. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, fair is fair. There's plenty of times that a woman will be in a film like that. So, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, that's so... But it's just doesn't quite make sense for the whole hospital experience. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, him just waking up in that hospital and walking around is fucking eerie as a motherfucker, right? That is eerie. And, you know, Robert Kirkman used that within the first scenes of The Walking Dead. You know? And also, his zombies move fast, right? So he was mad influenced by this. But it's just... Yeah. Oh, man. It's still very impactful today, watching this film. It's still... Like, the human component of the film works extremely well. It really does. Right? The performances are fantastic. You know, like just the dynamic between everyone, like Mark and Selena, you know, how you would act in a situation where, you know, like you think the world might be ending. Just all of that is great, right? Frank and Hannah, that dynamic. Getting like father and just trying to get his kid, you know. And it's just some of the small things, right? When Hannah is driving the cab, right? And she shows off and speeds and does the big stop. And then she's got a big grin on her face, right? Because even if everything's going to shit, kids are fucking kids. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, oh, I get a chance to drive. Look at me. Obviously, you do. So it's just that little detail that you're just like, oh man, this is so fucking good. This is so good. You know what I mean? Like, that was great. Like, Selena. Because, yeah, there's going to be people that are just like, look, I can't, I've got to be practical about what this is. How this is all going to go down, right? Just the thought of the tablets, right? Because if you think you can't stop something, whatever help you could give it, you would. So that all of that worked really well. And this, as I said, the base, I thought the army base, because it's horrible. It's fucking grim as a motherfucker, right? It is so horrible. But when you're like, yeah, that's what people would do, though. That's what they would do. They're not going to care about the age. And it's just like, oof, so grim. So grim. But it does capture the human condition. Because everyone wants to think, oh, I'd help everyone. Oh, I would. You know, you have people spurting off of that nonsense. But when it all goes to shit, you see people running off, people hiding, people becoming part of the mob. You know what I mean? People never hold to their convictions, man. So, I mean, this film just boiled it all down and showed us what it would be. You know, and in a way that makes perfect sense. And that is fantastic. You know what I mean? Now, what is, like, watching the film today, because I remember watching it, and I can't remember if I went to the cinema, if I watched it on video, like, I don't remember how I watched this film. But because if it was on TV, I can imagine them cutting out, like, Jim, you know what I mean, just sprawled out naked on the bed, right? If it's on TV, they're cutting that, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I remember not having an issue with it. But you watch it now, it looks like a 1970s, like, made-for-TV movie. Like, visually. Like, just the grain of it all. Like, when you look at films today, the picture is so crisp and sharp. This picture is not. Now, it does actually work, having it like that, because it kind of, it's funny, because it's not, and it's not filmed that way, but it kind of feels like it's some time capsule, some found footage, right? Of, yo, this is what the world was like when it all went to shit, right? That's what it looks and feels like, which is kind of nutty, but it really does. So, although, you know what I mean, like, yes, we've got better grainage on films now and since, but this one, it manages to still work. I did find the score a bit odd, and the music in places was really low. Now, I bought this on Prime Video, so maybe it's the, you know, something with that copy, and if you listen, you know, you watch it in other places, it comes off better. But yeah, the sound was really, really fucking low in places that you're just like, was it worth putting something there? Because it doesn't really give the effect you're going for because it's so low. You know? But yeah, 28 Days Later. Still really enjoyed it. And yeah, very, very much surprised. Because, as I said, didn't remember the beginning. And there's other bits I just could not, didn't recall that many people in the army base, right? I didn't recall the ending. Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, and how we got to that ending part. Because I remember there's a bit, you know, the whole dress bit. Like, I remember all of that. But then what came after that, as, you know. So, yeah, it was good because, you know, you're surprised again. You're like, oh, damn, they're doing that? Ooh. You know what I mean? So, yeah, if you have not seen this film and you like The Walking Dead, right, you like... Now, it's to say you like a horror, but I don't think this is a horror as such. As I said, it's a film that deals with that human condition. Kind of boils it down to, what would you do when the chip's against the wall, right? How would you act if you perceived the world to be ending? That's what this is. And it is very good. So yeah, if you enjoy that kind of movie, if you enjoy a zombie flick, if you like The Walking Dead, you will definitely, definitely enjoy 28 Days Later. Okay, so now we hop to 2007 for the sequel, right? It is 28 Weeks Later. Okay, so 28 Weeks Later. Right, that is the sequel to, obviously, 28 Days Later. And it came, I think it's 4 years. Yeah, I think it's 4 years after the original film. Let's just double check. No. It's okay, so the original dropped in 20 2002 in the UK, 2003 stateside, and then it's 5. Okay, yeah, 5, because the next one dropped in 2007 in US and UK. So, there you go, All right, we've wrapped that mystery up. Okay, so with this new film, it is directed by Jean-Carlos Fresnadillo. It is written by Fresnadillo, Jesus Olmo, Enrique Lopez Lavin, and Rowan Joff, who was the original screenwriter, and the others came on for rewrites and whatnot. I think Alex Garland wrote a little bit as well. Okay, so the film is produced by Alan Reich, Andrew McDonald, Enrique Lopez Lavin. It is executive produced by Alex Garland and Danny Boyle, and co-produced by Bernard Bellio. John Murphy took care of the music. Enrique Chedik was on cinematography. Chris Gill take care of all the editing duties, right? Shaheen Baj is casting. Production design, we've got Mark Tildesley. Art direction, we've got Patrick Garolf and Dennis Schneg. Michelle Day was set decoration. Costume design is Jane Petrie. Hair and makeup, Donald McInnes, Cliff Wallace, D. Sherwood Wallace, Gemma Scott Knox Gore, Karen Scott, Laura Shivavo, Simon Rose, Darren Robinson, Justin Pickeffley, Anthony Parker, Stephen Painter, Ian Morse, Jessica Moore, Jane Logan, Richard Glass, Andy Garner, Connie Daniel, Dave Bonniewell, and Hannah Bettella. Okie dokie, so that's all of that. Yeah, I think we jumped to cast, right? The cast comes next, and we have got, where should we look? Let's go here for the cast. So Don is played by Robert Carlyle. His wife Alice is played by Catherine McCormack. Their daughter, Tammy, is played by Imogen Pott. Okay. Their son, Andy, is played by Macintosh Muggleton. Sounds like a Harry Potter character. we've got Scarlett, the US medic, played by Rose Byrne. Doyle, the Delta Force sniper, played by Jeremy Rayner. His buddy and helicopter pilot, Flynn, is played by Harold Perrineau. There is Stone, the US general, played by Idris Elba. Who else do we have? Sally, played by Amanda Walker. Jacob, played by Shahid Ahmed. Jeff, played by Garfield Morgan. Karen, played by Emily Beecham. There is the boy, right, that turns up at the beginning, played by Jordan L. Balowie. The DLR Soldier, played by Megan Popiel. Senior Medical Officer, played by Philip Bullcock. That's probably our main lot, really. It's the big few, right? So the gist of the story, right? So almost 6 months after London was decimated by the unstoppable RAID virus, in 28 days later, the US Army has restored peace and repopulated the quarantined city. However, the deadly epidemic reawakens when an unsuspecting carrier of the highly transmittable pathogen enters the dead city with the first wave of returning refugees. This time, the horrible virus is more dangerous than ever. Has the next nightmare begun? That's not quite right. because I don't think the... it wasn't unsuspectingly entering the city. No, that was not what happened at all. But anyway. Yeah, so, you know, Danny Boyle was, you know, filming Sunshine, so he couldn't direct this one. And it's interesting, right? Because supposedly the director, how do we pronounce his name? Jean Carlos Fresnadillo wasn't happy with the original script from Rowan Joff. So him and his buddies rewrote a lot of it. I'd be interesting to know what that original script was, because I would say the new one, there's a lot of plot holes. It does feel like there's a lot of plot holes in here. I mean, it's interesting because the first one, right, if we want to make an analogy, is kind of like Alien. And the second one is like Aliens. You know, completely different in tone. Right? This one isn't so much dealing with the human condition. You know, it's a very different type of film. I did think it's interesting, though. Like, because we start off with Don, Alice, and their couple of friends, you know, taking shelter in a cottage. Boy turns up, and then all hell breaks loose. So seeing how all of that transpires, I thought that was good. Because, again, it does show, yeah, people aren't always the best, right? Not always the best. And then from that, we are, you know, with the US bringing refugees back to London, and Tammy and Andy are on the plane, well, helicopter. We'll see. Their accents are nothing like their parents, which is kind of odd, you know? That's kind of odd. But anyway, the kids, they've turned up. I think one of the big things with the film is, how are you repopulating after 6 months? That's not really a lot of time. You know what I mean? I feel you'd want to give it a lot longer to ensure, when you consider all the things that can carry, right? So bugs, rats, flea, just all of these things, right? Insects, which are all prevalent. And like cockroaches live forever. You know what I mean? So those things. So, like, to think that after 6 months you've got everything covered doesn't really make sense, right? I think if you said 28 months, right, that probably would have made more sense 28 months later. You know what I mean? Because, yeah, otherwise, Because that's 2.5 years, which is more, you can be like, yeah, that kind of works. Well, it's slightly under 2.5 years, but you would say that kind of works, really. So you have this thing, and supposedly NATO is in control, so you just think, why would they send the US to take care? Well, because there's a load of European countries in NATO, so you'd just be like, it would make more sense for one of them to come. There's things that don't quite add up, right? Just on that. And then, I mean, Don's access to the base, you kind of go, what does he like? How's he got all of this access? So there's things about the story that do feel odd. I mean, just the fact that kids can sneak out is an issue. I mean, to be honest, right? Like with a lot of films, the kids are the wonky part of the story. It's just how they act, what they do, just all of that kind of thing. Just kids running off, firstly, is, and especially when I think there's telling people, it's like parents will tell their kids, don't watch out for strangers because they could be creepy. And it's just like, but our neighbors are all fine. I don't know if I can buy that. But to be like, yo, there's zombies about, you're gonna believe it because you would have seen the footage. You know what I mean? Like something like this, everyone's seen the footage. So you would buy the caution of fuck. And especially these are fast. Yuri, like the old, the original zombie, the slow crawling, like you might think, I'll outrun that fucking thing. But these, you'd be shook because you'd be like, fuck, those run fast. Do I run fast enough? I'm not sure. How fast do they run? Are they faster than Usain Bolt? Ooh, I mean, although Usain Bolt wasn't around at that time, but you get my fist, right? You get what I'm saying? So just the hubris of the kids to do some of the things they do is dumb. So dumb, right? So we have that. But then it's some of the decisions that get made. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, the way all the refugees are put in one spot. Odd, right? Like, just, I mean, you have that, but then you've just got, I think it's decisions that people make, right? Like Flynn and the car. Is that right? Nerve gas as well. Nerve gas on zombies wouldn't work because they're not alive, right? So that means they don't have to take air, so they're not breathing anything in, which means nerve gas ain't gonna work, right? It doesn't really make any sense. You know what I mean? So there's these things with the story where you find yourself scratching your head because you're like, hold on a second. That doesn't add up, right? I think the strongest part of the film for me was the whole human crisis, right? Like Don's situation. Because, people do stupid things and they tell lies and they regret things, like all of that. You'd be like, yes, I buy that, right? But then some of the other stuff, you have the way certain people act. Like I think it was Sam, right? Sam's actions, you buy those things. So there's things, like, it's not terrible. There's things that do make sense, right? But then there's these other elements of the film where you're just a bit like, how does that work out, right? Like, how does Don survive the middle part of the film? You know, just the ending isn't, and when I said the subway, well, the underground, right, because it's in London, the underground segment doesn't quite make any sense, you know? Doesn't quite make any sense. Also, as I said, the kids, like, the fact that they kind of run off all the time when people are trying to protect, it's just frustrating, because it's just like, you understand what's going on. Also, the fact that everyone's making so much fucking noise, like screaming, and you're like, I've trodden on, grow the fuck up, man, grow the fuck up, you know what I mean? Or at least you just have someone go, listen, if you keep on screaming, we're dead. So put your hand over your mouth, pinch yourself, wrap a cloth around your mouth. I don't care. But stop fucking screaming. If a character said that, you'd be like, yeah, that's real, man. That's real. Because no one wants to die. Right? So you'd be vexed if someone keeps on putting your life at risk. You know what I mean? So there. You know, I think I mentioned with the first film that it looked it looks like a 1970s made for TV thing. This one doesn't. As I said, it's like shinier, it's crisper. The picture holds. The picture looks like a modern film, you know? So the way it's shot, these kind of things make sense, right? Like Flynn's reactions make sense. There are things in the film that works. But then there is just these holes where you're just like, I mean, that doesn't add up. What's going on with that section, right? It's just that kind of thing that is a bit odd about the sequel. And I remember from the time, because again, like with the first, I did not remember the majority of this, right? I didn't even remember Jeremy Rayner was in it. Idris Elba was in it. I had fucking no clue. No clue whatsoever, you know? But yeah, I remember not enjoying it as much as I did the first film. There is one other bit about the underground sequence, because she looks at the guy on the floor and says a name. But I couldn't quite make out, because of the light and everything, who, if that was someone we had met already. I wasn't very sure. It wasn't very clear, you know? But yeah, 28 weeks later, that's done, right? So now we are finally all caught up and ready to hit this new joint. I'm very intrigued, people. Very intrigued. And now, years later, we get this new sequel and the start of a trilogy. People, I am talking about 28 years later. Okay, so people, all roads have led to this, 28 years later. Yes, the third film in the franchise, and not the last. Oh, not the last, right? So back, we have Danny Boyle directing. Back, we have Alex Garland writing. Yes. Okay. So producing the film, we have got Danny Boyle. We have got Alex Garland. We have got, once again, again, Andrew McDonald. We got Peter Rice. We also have got Bernard Billow. I feel I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Anyway, executive producing, we have Cillian Murphy. All right, we've got Alon Reich. Yeah, we have got associate producing Joanne Smith and co-production from Richard Stiles. Archival production was handled by Paul Gardner. Okay, Young Fathers handled the music this time around. Back on cinematography, we have Anthony Dodd Mantle. Right, John Harris edits once again. Casting is Gail Stevens and Rebecca Farhall. Production design, we have Carson McCall and Gareth Pugh. Dan Clay, Yua Galak, Paul Kirandi, and Nick Wilkinson handle art direction. Set decoration is Naomi Moore. Costume design, we have Carson McCall and Gareth Pugh as well. Hair and makeup, we have Sally Alcott, Lisa Cachedo Barbette, Joe Barrett, Sophie Battersby, James Bernandes, Daljit Kua Bandari, Michael Burtley, Becky Bishop, Charlie Blewett, Molly J. Bowen Schofield, Stephen Brine, Emily? I think it's Emily Carruthers, Kevin Carter, Katie Cherry, Rebecca Cole, Maria Cork, Victoria Cotterell, David Darby, Louise Dupin, Candice Fox, Joe Gorover, Amy Jane Gwynn, Abigail Harricott-Smith, Sarah Harris, Anna Henderson, Chloe Henderson, Chloe Hendrickson, Kate Hill, Victoria Holt, Andy Hunt, Jennifer Hymus, Benjamin Ip, Alana May Ives, Oscar Jackman, Samuel James, Vicky Johnson, Reza Karim, Jennifer Nip, Buck, Serena Knott, Jessica Landland, Bethany Jade Lane, Alex Lawton. Whew. I don't think that's all hair and makeup. Yeah, that's a bit of an odd one. Anyway, right. Let's go to the cast because, yeah, that was a weird list. Anyway, people, in this film, we have got Aaron Taylor-Johnson is Jamie. His wife, Isla, is played by Jodie Comer. Their son, Spike, is played by Alfie Williams. We have got Jimmy, right, who we see at the very beginning, played by Rocco Haynes. There's, who else do we have in the village? Oh, yes, we've got Rosie, played by Amy Cameron. Sam, friend of the family, played by Christopher Fulford. There is Dr. Ian Kelson, played by Ralph Fiennes. Eric Sundervist, played by Edwin Riding. Jenny, played by Stella Gonnett. There is the Berserker, played by Chris Gregory. Samson, played by Chai Lewis Parry. His wife, or whatever, played by Cicely Crossland. We have then got the Sir Crystal, right, who we meet at the very end, played by Jack O'Connell, and his crew, played by Erin Kellerman, Emma Lard, Maura Bird, Sam Loke, Robert Rose, Connor Neal, Ghazi Al-Rufi, Sandy Batchelor, Chris Gregory. No, that's it. Yeah, that's the crew at the end. Not too much can be said because, you know. But yeah, that's them. Is there anyone else? Jimmy's mum is played by Kim Allen. His sister is played by Isla Vickers. And Darcy Smith. Theodore Rawlings is another of his sisters, along with Olivia Morley, Annabel Graham, Hannah Allen Robertson. His cousin is played by Harriet Taylor. His aunt is played by Hayley Flattery. So these are, I think, all the kids we see in the room at the beginning with Jimmy. I believe. It's not overly clear, but that's what I think it is. Yes. Anthony is played by Jeffrey Austin Newland. But I believe that's the main lot of the crew that we come across, I think. Okay. So the gist of the story this time out, because it is a very, very different one. It's been almost 3 decades since the Rage virus escaped a biological weapon laboratory, and now, still in a ruthless enforced quarantine, some have found ways to exist amidst the infected. One such group of survivors lives on a small island connected to the mainland by a single heavily defended causeway. When one of the group leaves the island on a mission into the dark heart of the mainland, he discovers secrets, wonders, and horrors that have mutated not only the infected but other survivors as well. I don't know what it is with these synopsises, because so many times they're not even right. It is kind of bonkers, because it wasn't one person leaves the causeway, the village, you know what I mean? It's a bit baffling. People, but what are you going to do, right? So 2007, 28 weeks later came out, so 18 years, right? I think that's right. 18 years later we get a new film, which is kind of bonkers, you know what I mean? It's kind of bonkers that's what happened. But we'll see what happens, right? Because we've got this film and then they've got two more, right? And we know we're getting another film at the least. I mean, I feel we're getting both films essentially, because the I forgot her name. Fuck, she directed Old Guard. Really good director. Anyway, she directed the next installment, right, at the same time as this. They were directed back to back, right? think it's like 28 years later, Stone Temple, the Bone Temple, that's it. So that's already been done, right? That's coming out January next year. And I think the third part is being produced, like, you know, it's on shoot right now. So we're getting those. So I think this film might make more sense when everything has been connected, you know? But we start off with all of these kids in a room and they're watching a Teletubbies, which is pretty frightening. Like, I never understood the Teletubbies, man. I mean, I was too old for the Teletubbies, but I didn't get how they were so big because it just seemed like weird noise, right? I don't even know. Is Teletubbies still a thing? I don't even know, but it was odd. It was odd. So you got all these kids in a room watching telly. And as I said, it's not clear that they're all related. I just assumed because the world's gone to shit. Like, you know what I mean? There's one house and everyone's just got the kids in one spot, right? That everyone's in the house talking, trying to work out what to do. That's what I assumed it is. But, you know, from IMBD, it does seem that they are all meant to be related. Doesn't really mean anything. Because basically, all hell breaks loose. Infected get into the house. Jimmy's the only one that escapes. Goes to the church where his dad is the vicar. And then, you know, I think that was in the trailer, I believe. Like the whole vicar part. So we have all of that. And then we kind of jump forward in time. So now we're in this village, right? We're in this little village. We got Jamie, Spike, and Jamie's wife, Isla, who's ill in bed. We don't know what's wrong with her. You know, we just know she's ill. And, so because they're on this island, it's in the Scotland Highlands, it's off Scotland, right? So it's connected to the mainland by this causeway that is only there in low tide, which, that, not a bad idea, right? It's definitely a way to stay safe, although you would think that the infected just wait. Right, wait for it to go low tide and then sport, but you know, they don't. Anyway, that's where everyone is. And so they're living their life, doing their thing. They've got food, right? It seems okay. The only thing, they don't have radio, they don't have phones, they don't have electricity, none of that stuff. But they're living all right. Everyone looks pretty healthy, right? Which is something I wasn't quite sure about. But we'll get to that. So Jamie takes Spike to the mainland. Now, Spike's 12. And supposedly what the villagers, elder council, seem to say that it's usually 14-year-olds. But for whatever reason, Jamie's like, Spike can handle it. So they go to the mainland. When they're on the mainland, we come across a new type of zombie, which is, I mean, the fact that we then have these new breeds is interesting. It does make sense, right? If we're saying after 28 years this virus is still there, it's going to have morphed, right? It's most definitely, you know, changed, adapted, evolved. So I was like, yeah, okay. Also with the fact of the alphas, again, it makes sense, right? These things make sense. I think there was this zombie show on Netflix. I think it was called Black Summer. And I believe they had big alphas in their one as well. But yeah, all of that makes like the zombie part makes sense. So we see them here, right? But obviously, because of Spike's mum, Jimmy's wife, being ill, Spike wants to find a cure, right? So that's how this story kind of becomes something. But there's a lot going on here. There's a lot going on. And I thought the acting was good. The acting was good, you know? But there are some questions. Like, the going to the mainland, I'm not quite sure what the point is. I thought they're going to hunt for me, right? Because essentially Britain has gone wild again, you know? I think that's the term, wilding, right? That you let nature just grow, take its course, do its thing. So, you know, if trees are going to grow, trees are going to grow, right? The grass, let the grass just grow. Let everything go back to the wild. And that's what's happened. So we got, I feel it was a horde. I don't think you call a group of horses hordes, but we see a whole load. I think it's horses, maybe it's deer. I couldn't really see because they're in the distance on the screen. Right, but run through. Herd. That's it. Herd. It's a herd. Running. But they're not shooting at them. You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, you don't come for the meat. Right? So you can bring a load of meat to the village and everyone's eating. And, you know what I mean? That's not the course. Kill zombies is one thing, but I just didn't think they brought enough like arrows or equipment for that. So the initial idea going to the mainland, it's like, okay, cool. But then it's just like, but why are you here? You know? So we have these things that don't quite make sense. And then the fact that Spike goes out again, seeing the fact that he froze multiple times, doesn't really make any sense, right? Doesn't make any sense. And at the least, right, if you're going to do it, you feel he would try and go even more fortified than the first time because of the fear. You know what I mean? Because he was so afraid, like, come more prepared. You know, but didn't quite make sense. You know, we have that thing with distance and walking. Where it's like, you know, the early seasons of Game of Thrones, it took them ages to get places. And then in the last couple of seasons, they're like, oh, we're going there. We're here. And it's just like, wait, how you get there so quickly? You know what I mean? And that's the thing here. It's just like the distance didn't quite add up how far they're walking. But I think one big thing, right? I think in the first film, everyone did seem like they haven't eaten in a while. You know? Like, that they were kind of disheveled and all of that. In this one, they've got eggs. They can have chickens and things like that. But if you're not getting a lot of meat and you're not getting a load of nutrients and vitamins and all of that, you're not going to be... You know what I mean? Let's say healthy. Now, this guy there, there's going to be a load of vegetarians and vegans being like, what are you talking about? I'm just like, it's facts. Because they won't be getting balanced diets, right? which is the thing about going to the mainland, thinking, oh, are they going for meat? If they're not, they're not getting balanced diets, right? But everyone looks healthy, right? No one's looking a little thin, right? A little wavy. Everyone's teeth look good. And you'd think, I bet there's no toothpaste. So how the fuck is everyone's teeth good? You know, it's like body hair. And I say this all the time with shit, right? But it's something that not everyone seems to think about, is there's no barbers, there's no electricity for clippers and shit. So everyone's hair, like, you'd think people would have real long hair or kind of hatcheted bits off, right? People would have a beard, or like, you're not having a crisp shave, it's not looking neat and tidy and all of this jazz. You know what I'm saying? That's the big thing. Everyone, it looks too neat. It looks too perfect. And it shouldn't. Right? It shouldn't. The only, like, the one thing at the very end, Sir Crystal's teeth looked kind of messy. And you're like, finally. Someone like, finally. Yes, that looks, that's how it should be. Right? So we have that. Now, all of those things are whatever, whatever. But there is something going on with one of the zombies, which I mean, the problem is you can't talk about it. But it just is so insane. It is so insane. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's a bit like in the second film when they use nerve gas, right? When you're just like, yeah, but if they're not alive, they're not breathing. If they're not breathing, they're not taking in nerve gas, right? It's one of them ones with this thing that we see, and you're just like, yeah, that makes no sense. That makes no sense whatsoever, because shit ain't alive. She ain't alive. So what are we saying? What are we saying? You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, just odd. Just very odd, right? I don't know. We have this, I think it's this thing, and we've seen it in like the second film as well, like with people that cause other people's deaths, right? It's their stupidity, their actions that have led to someone dying. But there's no real, fuck, that's me, I did that, right? Where's the room? Where's, or the thing that is haunting you now? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the only, there's one character in a second where we have that, right? And that's part of the plot. But some of the other characters, that's what I'm referring to. And again, in this one, and it's just like, your stupid actions have led to this thing. There's also this illness, this mysterious illness, which I don't know how we're diagnosing it. When there's nothing, right? There's nothing going on in this world now. There's no electricity, there's not. So it's just like, how are you diagnosing this thing? That's some bizarre shit. That's some bizarre shit, right? It's just these things that become these plot points, which are so, I mean, they're kind of egregious. In the way that you're just like, I don't know how we get to there, Right, how do we get to there? As I said, the acting is good. Right, it's well shot. It's well done. But we have these things that are just a little baffling. You know? Like, as I said, the teeth, the hair, just this kind of stuff. Like clothing. How are you making all of these clothes? Because we're not on like badly dyed tunics and stuff, which you feel you would be by this point. You know? I mean, the fact that we have a load of naked zombies is one thing. Because it's just like, okay, yes, they're outdoors all the time. So their clothes are just going to disintegrate after a while. You know what I mean? So you'd be like, all right, yeah, that shit, I buy. I mean, yeah, you know, maybe you might have some with a half a shirt on, right? Like, not everything's going to disintegrate at the same speed. So you might have bits of clothing sticking around, but essentially, that all makes sense. You know what I mean? But yeah, there's just certain parts of the film where I'm just scratching my head. Like, it is very tonally different to the first two, which I'm not mad at, because I'm fine with you trying something different, right? Going in a different course, playing in a different genre, right? I think, as you said, the first film's like Alien, the second's like Aliens, you know? Like, when you think about other films, like Blade 1 and Blade 2, very different films, right? We won't talk about Blade 3, but yeah, very different films. So doing something different, fire. You know what I mean? I'm down. Just make it work for me. That's all I need. Make it work, and I'm with you till the end. Now, as I said, because this was filmed back to back with Bone Temple, and then there's the third one, maybe it makes more sense and more information is divulged in that film, right? So it might be one of those ones that you have to watch as a whole for a better experience. So we'll see, you know what I mean, when that drops. I'll probably have some more to say on this then. But until then, I think if you really like the second film, this is probably closer to the second film than it is to the first film. Though, also, there's stuff that gets said at the end of the second film that seems to maybe not have happened in the third film. Right? I don't know. It's a little odd. But yeah, if you really like the second, I think you'd probably dig this iteration. It's out in the cinema though, people. So yeah, 28 years later is out. I'm very curious to know what you think. So hit me up. Let me know. Do you have the same issues as me? Did you love it? Do you think, what is he talking about? Let me know, people. 28 years later. Yo, so there we go, people. What did you think of this week's? You know what I mean? It was me. You know what I mean? We put a big chunk of the episode over to Danny Boyle's. You know what I mean? Baby. Looking at all three parts. Did you have a preference? Have you liked them all? Did you jump on from the very beginning? You know what I mean? Like, did you love them all? Hate them all? What's your vibe, people? And, you know, did you enjoy Rust? What did you think of that one, right? And then there's Home Delivery. Did it make you laugh? People, let me know. But remember, we've got a two-parter, so go over, check out part two, where we look at a new film, Abazo. And we speak with the lady behind it, and we'll have a fantastic conversation. So people, we will see you in part 2 right now.
Peace.